As you're all aware, working in the SRE trade and technical trade, no conference or project or rollout or rollback would be complete without a visit from legal. And so I present to you Simon McGarr.
So the idea for this came from a conversation I had with Simon last weekend where he scared the crap out of me, basically. Hands up here who deals with personally identifiable information on a user of someone in the European Union. Okay, anyone, like log data maybe that their clicks might have generated? Ad preferences, email? Yeah, okay, you're going to have a bad time. So maybe we could start with this, Simon, and say, what got you interacting with nerds like us on data protection and the likes?
Well, I was hired by Digital Rights Ireland, who are Ireland's largest, being the small, a very small, entirely volunteer organisation, but still the largest because they're the only one, to do with digital rights. And we've taken a series of strategic litigation cases in the area, first of all, of data retention. And last year, we had the decision from the European Court of Justice, which is the highest court in Europe, striking down the Data Retention Directive and ensuring that the Charter of Fundamental Rights for 500 million citizens was upheld as the basic law of the EU, which wasn't a bad start to the week. And then the this year we've had two other cases that have come that we've been involved in. We were joined as an amicus in USA versus Microsoft. This is a case where the United States government has subpoenaed data from a Hotmail account. The Hotmail account, the data resides in Dublin. The subpoena comes from a local law enforcement official, a prosecutor in New York. And the question is whether New York prosecutors have the right to simply reach into data centers when they feel like it here in Dublin or elsewhere in Europe, but mostly in Dublin. And finally, the case that we were in April, we went to the European Court of Justice again. And on this occasion, we had been joined as an amicus, the first Irish non-statutory amicus ever granted. We were joined as an amicus to Schrems versus the Data Protection Commissioner, which is generally known in the press as Max Schrems versus Facebook, though poor old Facebook aren't actually in the room. And this is a question over whether or not, in the end, what the European Court of Justice wanted to find out was whether or not the Safe Harbour Agreement, which allows personal data of European citizens to be transferred to the United States and back again, but mostly to the United States, whether that, in fact, is lawful. And the judgment is pending on that one, but I can tell you from what I saw in terms of the questioning that I'd be reasonably confident that, at the very least, the Advocate General's opinion, that's an initial opinion by a court officer. He's a very senior lawyer, but he's not one of the judges. But 8 out of 10 times, the Advocate General's opinion is accepted by the court, with some minor amendments, perhaps. And certainly, it's the same Advocate General and the same primary judge who were in the data retention case. And so there was the same line of questioning in respect of the Commission's, the basis of the Commission's belief that the United States did have what's termed adequate protection for personally identifying data, personal data, of European Union citizens. Unfortunately, the Commission had to admit that since they had made that decision back in 2006, I think it was, perhaps some new information had come to light as to what happens to data when it travels to the United States. And they
I'm sure we're as shocked as they were.
I know, and they were shocked. I'm sure they were as shocked as they said. Despite the fact that new facts might have arisen, they claimed that the legal position was that their previous decision that all was well ought not to be revisited. It would be fierce inconvenient for everyone concerned. And I'm not totally certain that the court is going to go with them on that. There were also other advances where they told the court that it was their position that their decision that everything was okay in the United States and that there is adequate protection, that decision, uniquely amongst all legal decisions or administrative decisions by an entity in the European Union, that decision shouldn't be governed by the Charter of Fundamental Rights. Again, that wasn't exactly well received by the court. And that's where the Commission has had to go in order to defend this position.
Because at the end of the day, the court has the final ruling on what is legal, not the Commission.
The court will strike down a law, the court can strike down a decision, the court can nullify any action of any part of the European Union's apparatus or any part of any legislation which contradicts the treaties or the recently legally enforceable Charter of Fundamental Rights. And the Charter of Fundamental Rights is a unique document in that it is a basic statement of human rights with an explicit recognition of a new human right, though they will argue that it's simply a reformulation of previously acknowledged human rights, an explicit recognition of the right to data protection as a human right, so separate and distinct from privacy.
When I try to describe this to people, they seem to have a lot of problems. Like, why would they be so strong? And usually it's, well, we have a law because of the Stasi.
The Stasi have an effect, yes. Historically, there is a reason. But there are also, I mean, there are two historical difficulties. One, Germany's constitutional court was formed after World War II, and it was charged with the duty of ensuring that the basic law of the democratic federal republic of Germany was ensured, was upheld, and the purpose of the basic law was to make sure that nobody could pass a law to bring in anybody that there might have been a bit like previous recent unpleasantnesses. And so through the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, a case law of human rights developed most strongly in Germany. Now, of course, there's a help if just across the border in the other German state, there isn't really much in the way of practical human rights, though there's many of the human rights written into legislation at the time, and that was the Soviet state in East Germany. Now, what happened was that the Soviet state fell, the extremely heavy personal surveillance, state surveillance system was thrown open, and this was almost unique. Typically, when state surveillance systems are overthrown, the records are destroyed. In Germany, you can actually go and visit your file. If they had a file, you can go and visit it, you can open it up, you can read who informed on you. You can find out what they said. You can, you know, the records are all there, and they kept excellent records in Germany, as they tend to.
It sounds like those that data should have been protected, you know, to avoid.
That was where the German court kind of felt, following unification, that this really is one of those things that we here in Germany think is important. Now, Germany is important constitutionally inside the European Union, but also there has been a very long-standing tension. There are never rows, there are only tensions, sometimes interesting tensions. That's when things get shouty. between the European Court of Justice and the German Constitutional Court. The European Court of Justice is the top court in Europe. It is the top court in Europe because it announced it one day that it was the top court in Europe. And the German Constitutional Court got a bit nervous because it said, well, we have to uphold the basic law of Germany, including human rights, including data rights and privacy and so on. And unfortunately, you don't have any human rights in your constitution, i.e. the treaties at that time. Mm-hmm. So there was a long journey to incorporate first the Council of Europe's European Convention on Human Rights, which is a separate body that stands outside the EU. I'm very sorry, this is actually true. And there was a lot of effort made by the European Court of Justice to bring in that human rights case law into the Court of Justice's worldview. The German Constitutional Court still wasn't happy. They both were careful never to contradict each other, but still in all, there isn't actually a totally open acceptance that the ECJ was the superior court in Germany.
As engineers, we know what happens when you take two giant big code bases and merge them together. No one's ever happy with the result.
No, and in the end, what happened was they decided to scrap and rework. Okay. So we ended
this
up with the
second system syndrome.
We ended up with the Charter of Fundamental Rights, which was brought in as part of the Treaty of Lisbon, and which after a couple of years of the Treaty of Lisbon, where everyone was feeling, okay, we're kind of bedding it in, it became legally enforceable. And that's where we stand now. And what we found is that with the Digital Rights Ireland case, which is the first case to be taken really testing the Charter of Fundamental Rights as a basis, and it happens to have been taken some couple of weeks after the Snowden facts came to light. We had been waiting in a queue for 18 months, by the way. But nonetheless, that was just when the hearing came up. And so it was a heated hearing. Typically, hearings in the Court of Justice would take maybe an hour, 2 hours. Ours took, I think it was 4, 6 hours, something like that.
We had representatives from across Europe, all the member states, all the European Union entities. There are a lot. And all of them, barring ourselves and the European Data Protection Supervisor, argued that data retention was OK. And they argued that many of them, the Commission was taking the lead on this, and the Commission is the executive, the equivalent of a government for the European Union. The Commission was taking the lead, and they said, look, the Charter is lovely. Absolutely. Like, totally. Human rights, yeah, absolutely. But it can't actually strike down laws. That would be unthinkable. Chaos could reign. We'd never know what was legal. After all, it would hardly be democracy at all. And the court really didn't go with that as an argument. And they said, actually, I think we're the superior court here again, and we will strike down laws. So currently what's happening at the moment is the Data Protection Directive and the e-privacy directive have a writ running across all of Europe. And under those laws, you may not transfer data from the EU outside to a third country unless the third country is deemed adequate.
Now, there's a few things I'd love to pick into that. So, first of all, what do they mean by data? Does this mean if I go on holidays in America, can I check my email?
Good question. Personally identifiable data. So,
sounds like email.
Much email is personally identifiable. You actually end up having, I mean, this is a terrible thing to have a person happen to a person, but you do sometimes end up sifting through it and asking yourself, personally identifiable, yes, no. For example, a postcode, is it personally identifiable data? Currently, the Data Protection Commissioner for Ireland says yes.
Wow. Okay.
So that's a postcode.
So I certainly won't be able to get access to my online banking from another country.
You won't, strictly, because in order to send it to you, to your phone, you'll be sending the data outside the EU.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is unfortunate if you want to build an internet that isn't just doesn't have a wall around it or at the edges of the EU. So there is every effort made to try and find some way around this. And currently, the Commission is attempting to renegotiate with America on the grounds that maybe adequacy, maybe things could be a bit better. And maybe we could get a couple more promises, and like things could be a bit better. Really, they could. So I sat next to earlier in the week. I sat on a panel with the State Department's head of the mission to Brussels, and he said that there, as always, there's an ongoing dialogue on the topic. And the man from the equivalent of the Secretary General, the head of the Commission unit who runs this, he's the Commissioner's head civil servant, he said, we urgently need to restore trust in the internet. This is urgently needed. Now, from a diplomatic point of view, this is screaming alarms, flashing lights, this is an emergency. Now, the reason is the negotiations have been going on for years. Look, we just don't think safe harbor might not be all that. Maybe it could be a bit better. And the United States haven't been particularly receptive to request to promise not to put it under the desert in Nevada or whatever else they might like to do with it.
So I have seen many, you know, great TV programs about American politicians, and I can't imagine a European Union bureaucrat saying, we need you to change a law to respect people's data.
Your national
European
security business is
less important than people's email.
Yeah, that's right. The European Union is feeling uncomfortable, and we think you should change your national security business. That hasn't been a very effective negotiating strategy to date.
Unfortunately.
And so we haven't seen a great deal of progress in the dialogue. However, Mr. Schrems is an unhappy Austrian student. He complained here in Ireland to the Data Protection Commissioner that he didn't think Facebook was really minding his data the way they ought to. In fact, he thought maybe they were sending it to America where it wasn't being minded at all right. Mm-hmm. And the Data Protection Commissioner here said, I'm sorry, I can't look into that. That's a frivolous and vexatious complaint. He took a court case saying it isn't a judicial review. And the judge there said, actually, I can't make that decision without asking the ECJ what they think. So the whole thing was packaged up, sent to Europe. We were stapled to it just before it was left. And And so we were attached to the case, and then we were sent off to Luxembourg as well. And we made our case in Luxembourg. They weren't interested in Mr. Schrems, except in a peripheral manner, in that he turned up and so on. They heard him and that they were respectful. But what they were very interested in was the question of, actually, we'd like to talk to you, the European Commission, and ask you some hard and pointed questions. And by the way, the room is quite something. You sit down here, and there's a raised platform with 16 judges in red robes who sit around you in a horseshoe circle. And then the barrister is tormented.
I've seen this Star Trek episode.
That's right. It is very like that. It is very much like that. Or the Council of Time Lords that moved Doctor Who from the second to the third. It does feel a lot like that. What happened was that the commission really was left asking the court, give us more time. Don't make a decision here that will...
make things uncomfortable.
That will interrupt the ongoing dialogue. So, you know, we really think that the United States is going to hear us with the dialogue if you just give us a bit more time. And the court has gone away, and they are going to make a decision. That's what courts do. And I think that they will make a decision in line with the Data Retention Directive decision, which is that the Charter of Fundamental Rights has to be upheld. And if there is an administrative decision by a European Union entity, then I think the likely outcome is that the decision will be annulled without a decision of safe harbour being an adequate safety net. Transfers may not occur.
So in the absence of any new wonderful life-saving or data-saving legislation...
An end to the dialogue, let us say. An urgent and very suddenly quite dramatic change in position. We're likely to see this occurring on a timescale of a decision being made, and these decisions are immediately effective, somewhere in the region of October to December of this year.
Okay, so maybe by Christmas you will no longer be able to get your email while...
Until a new adequacy arrangement is put in place.
Does anyone here have any systems that transfer data across the Atlantic for backup purposes, access purposes? We're going to have a bad time. Is anyone working on partitioning your network transatlantically, out of curiosity?
You laugh, but actually, in the last couple of weeks, since the hearing, both Twitter and Dropbox have moved businesses from the United States side to Dublin. And I think the end point of this is that you're going to see, if you can't do the transfer, you're going to have a duplication where you have the United States boxed off, and the rest of the world we run out of Dublin, as it happens. It's a bit like giving the big bad wolf all of Grandma's things and asking him to just nip down and look after. You just wouldn't be sure what would happen if that happens. What does the furry thing do? It looks menacing.
This is fantastic.
Okay.
Does anyone have a question? Because if you don't, you're liars. I'm gonna practice my throw. I'll give you, Adrian. Oh, no. I'm blaming the lights. It's like the conch.
So how does this work with... I should mention, I am the security officer for my company, so I do have to care about this stuff. There are countries such as Singapore and New Zealand who have very similar laws to Europe. In fact, they're pretty much the exact same. How does that work with... If safe harbour goes away, do those still stay?
No, there's still a system. The safe harbour isn't the safe harbour mechanism. The mechanism remains. It's simply the explicit finding that the United States in particular has complied with the safe harbour, it reaches the bar. So if that's struck down, then it is simply struck down just for the United States, because that's the question that was being put to the court. The system of adequacy and assessment of adequacy in terms of the protection of data remains the same. These are all free bits of info. I love it. I love giving away free info.
So I suppose one of the interesting things that came out of the Snowden revelations is there are secret laws that mean things that no one knows about. Did the court offer any ideas on how they're going to determine adequacy when the other side has secret rules?
Well, an inability to determine adequacy means that adequacy can't be guaranteed. So if one of the issues is there are secret rules, then we can't know if you're adequate, and therefore we can't know if you don't know you're adequate, you're not adequate. So the very fact that there's secret legislation or secret interpretations of pieces of legislation would seem to mitigate against adequacy to start with.
So to expand on the previous question of private access, if you travel to the US and try to access your private data on the services hosted in the EU, what if you use a VPN service for that? What if you buy a private VPN with an endpoint in the EU, you access it from the US and access your own data through that? Are the VPNs that allow you to do that going to be illegal? Are services going to have to filter out such accesses because they can't guarantee where they come from, or what?
Well, I mean, your own data is this particular case. Because, of course, you can't breach your own rights by taking your own data outside the EU. That's all. That's allowed. By definition, you've consented to whatever you're doing, unless you're having a particularly...
It's purely third party that's moving your data around.
Correct. A processor or a controller. Mm-hmm. So if it's your own data and you stick it on your own USB stick and you travel around the world with it, A-OK. And if you stick it into your computer and you process it like mad, A-OK. It's when when people are sending it through the pipes on your behalf, or not on your behalf, on their behalf.
Or you log into Netflix and it watches what you watch on your TV
and it's doing things other than things that you are in actual personal control of. Those are when those matters pop up.
Ah, thank you.
Begging the question as to why we let spies build our networks, why do we let legislatures rule on technology they don't understand?
Well, I mean, you've got to take a broader view. The list of things legislators don't understand doesn't stop at technology. As a result, it's just the latest in a long line of things that we give legislators power over, just to see what happens.
So, question. If taking your own data outside is A-OK, because trivially you have consented to that, does agreeing to a privacy policy or agreeing to a service agreement with a big company, is that also fine because you have consented?
Well, no, because you've ceased to become, it's now under, it's controlled by a data processor. There's a dichotomy in roles in European law between the data controller and the data processor. And they have different duties, but in short, you've asked someone to process your data on your behalf. Also, inevitably, they do things that you didn't explicitly say, yeah, that was fine. And if you did, you didn't really know what you're doing, and therefore it's not informed consent, and the whole thing falls apart as soon as you look at it.
Yeah, so the way I described it to people was, just like you also have a right not to be tortured by the police, and that's not a right you can voluntarily give up.
So I'm sorry to be the bad guy here, but you've all mentioned the Americans, and they're not the only one doing this. Are you going to stop the internet traffic to the UK? Because they too were involved. And as far as I know, at least five agencies around the world were involved.
Yes.
And only one of them is American.
Well, the reason that it is a question of what the relationship is between the US and the EU is that there's explicitly a safe harbour decision, a decision issued by the European Commission explicitly relating to the US. And it was that which was before the courts. The broader question of whether the United Kingdom government is illegitimately processing data hasn't reached the courts yet. We haven't seen a UK case travel upwards. We've only seen the court dealing with the question of the single safe harbour decision from, as I say, I think it was 2006. Something's niggling at me, it might be 2002, but you all have the internet, for goodness sake, you can look it up yourself.
It does seem that GCHQ is not compatible with the Charter of Fundamental Human Rights.
The Charter of Fundamental Rights is going to have a very interesting time of it in its relationship with Britain in the next couple of years. Britain is already talking about seceding from the Convention on Human Rights, and that's difficult. But if they did it, I mean, there would be lots of legal questions. It would be a breach of the Good Friday Agreement. Basically, I don't think they thought it through, and it would just sound good on the telly. But nonetheless, if they do it, it is doable. You can't secede from the Charter of Fundamental Rights without leaving the EU altogether. So the Charter will still hold true. the Charter's power only touches those areas which are touched by European law, which is an extremely broad and always growing area of the world. So, I mean, European law is now moving into the area of criminal justice, which it was previously totally anathema to even think that such a thing could happen. There will eventually not be a place in the legal system that doesn't invoke EU law in some way, and eventually the Charter, therefore, will hold sway across almost everything, certainly everything significant in terms of principle.
Exciting.
And there will be problems for Britain out of that. That said, if you go to London, Ireland is a small place, and we all have to do lots of different jobs in order to get all the jobs done because there aren't enough of us. So there aren't enough lawyers to specialise in Ireland in just one kind of law.
Or data protection.
Or just data protection. I'll also defend your dog if he bites someone. I'll also, you know, if you break your leg, I'll help you. All those things. Ireland has to do lots of things. In London, there's specialisation. The result of the specialisation is that human rights lawyers think about going to Strasbourg, because that was where you went if you were doing human rights law, because there wasn't a Charter of Fundamental Rights. And EU lawyers think about ball bearings and zippers and commercial entities and so on and so forth. And generally, never the twain meet. So the people who are looking for to bring a case in a hypothetical case in London actually have a difficulty finding a person who is expert in human rights law who feels comfortable going to the EU. Mm-hmm. So this is just one of the situations. You have a new field. You have lots of specialisation. I mean, it's a bit of an esoteric field even here. We once had a meeting. We were asked to come in and meet the minister. There was a round table discussion of everybody that was recognised as an expert in the legal field in data protection. There were seven of us. and that included the minister. And that was it. Like, it's a very small area. You could name the people. And if you go to London and you're looking at who will take this case, you're probably going to end up looking at an NGO like Privacy International or Liberty, but they're already taking a case to Strasbourg. That's where they go. That's where human rights goes in London. So it's going to take a while before the effect of the Charter is felt in large, specialised legal fields, mm-hmm. whereas the cases that have come up so far have come out of Ireland, they've come out of Austria, they've come out of the edge of empire, where there are not as many people, and so people are used to having this sort of cross-fertilisation between areas, EU law and human rights.
Do we have time for one more question?
We've got one more question.
Oh. I'll tell you what, I'll do two short answers and then we get two questions in.
So the determination for safe harbour for each country, when is it made and how? What triggers this?
Well, the determination is made by the European Commission. It's made when the Commission is probably asked, because this is how it works for the Convention as well. The word they use is not adequacy but appropriateness in order to keep them legally separate. But nonetheless, there's a sort of a field trip where you examine the country and then you say, can you show us your documents? And everybody reads the documents. And then there's a bit where there's questions asked and eventually a decision has to come out from the Commission. That all seems fine. That's adequate. Or don't know if that's adequate. Don't think so. And it's a high bar. Adequacy is a very high bar. If you look at the countries that reach it, outside the EU, it is very difficult to reach that goal. And it's very difficult if you're running a mass surveillance bulk collection system. So difficult that we'd prefer not to think about it. I beg your pardon. It's the system of data protection. It's the system. So there will also have to be, and it's written into the Charter, it's an equal fundamental right, Article 8.3. There must be the power of independent oversight over the processing of data, that there is oversight. Here, the oversight is done by a data protection commissioner, and this is one of the questions that the case law in the court seems to be developing.
Is the commissioner picky enough?
Are commissioners picky enough? Are they truly independent? We've seen the commissioner in Hungary, in Austria, and in... Now, where was the third one? Can't remember the third one now. Anyway, so we've seen them melted down. The commission takes the government to court and says that your independent data protection authority isn't sufficiently independent and shut it down and build a new one.
Wow.
Change the law now. And the court will say, yeah, change the law. And you have to change the law if you're a government. You have to melt that data protection authority down. If the same thing happened to us here, we'd have to shut down the Port Arlington. We'd have to build an entire new regulatory framework. We'd have to create a new funding arrangement. We'd have to restock it with civil servants out of the pool, like a kind of a trout pool. And we would have to do all those things immediately. And there's always a possibility the Commission would turn to Ireland and say that. They'd say, actually, I don't think that your data protection authority is sufficiently...
Is it true that lawyers cannot give a short answer to any question?
So, Simon, thank you very much. I think it's abundantly clear that we'll have plenty of work to do. We just don't know what it is, whether it's turning up more data centres here, turning off the fibre to the Atlantic, turning down everything and going home.
Send in the sharks.